Gideon, is he a strong, faithful person, or is he a weak person with not much faith? He's weak, yeah. Which is really funny because God comes to him, and remember the first words out of his mouth? Hello, mighty warrior. And Gideon is everything but a mighty warrior. It is, again, an important lesson for us that God doesn't see us how we see ourselves. God sees us through the lens of Jesus, through the lens of the faith that he's given us, and through what we can become and how we often then use that faith in special circumstances. It's true that everyone here wishes that they could change something about themselves, right? There's something about your body, your physical appearance, your personality that you wish you could change. But God has created you to be unique in significant ways. And when God looks at you, he doesn't see your deficiencies. Sometimes we look at ourselves through our past failures. Like, oh man, I've done this wrong. And because of that, I now define myself that way. And God doesn't see it that way. Especially for those with faith in Jesus, he sees us as someone forgiven. Sometimes we define ourselves through our struggles. I am an alcoholic. And because of that definition that we have, sometimes that can have ramifications, sometimes positive, but often very negative ramifications in our life. God doesn't see us that way. He doesn't see us through our past failures, but he sees us through faith. He sees us through our relationship with him. Gideon is a scared man. He has been hiding out 7 years. Every year, the Midianite army comes into the valley, and like a big, giant bully, he comes in, beats everyone up, grabs their milk money, and then heads on out. They are just, they're mean, and no one could stop him because the army comes in. It is way too big for the Israelite nation who is not trained in warfare. And because of that, they end up running and hiding inside the caves up in the mountains. They're scared. They have no way to defend themselves. And they just have to look down into the valley and watch as their crops, their houses, everything gets taken away. Their cows, sheep, donkey, PlayStations, Xboxes, everything just gets hauled straight off. And when they finally leave, like locusts, they're actually called that. They're locusts. They leave. They come down the mountain, they look, and they go, now I've got to rebuild. And it's a struggle. So finally, God says to Gideon, you are the person. And of course, immediately Gideon throws up lots of excuses, much like we do. And then Gideon goes even further because he decides to do some tests. Now again, sometimes we throw out tests, and I think throwing out tests to God is dangerous, but we got to make sure that we're comparing apples to apples. Was God's will clear in Gideon's life? Yeah, God came to him and said, you shall defeat the Midianites. And he didn't go, man, I wonder what God wants me to do in this situation. He's like, I just told you, but he couldn't accept that. So when he put out this fleece, it was not to determine God's will, because I think sometimes we do that. Like, Lord, I think you want me to switch careers, but I'm not sure. I've been praying and praying and praying, and I don't know what to do. And so, Lord, I am going to put an application in, and if something opens up, then I will trust that this is a direction you may want me to head. If you shut that door, then I will accept that. Is that an acceptable way to work? Yeah, that's not fleece throwing. It'd be different if God comes to you and gives to you in your prayers, Lord, what do you want me to do? And the very next day, God opens up miraculously stuff for you to do, and you go, oh, I don't know if this is really God's will. It's okay to try and determine and discern God's will, but when God's will is clear, don't throw out a fleece. Lord, I don't know if I should have an affair on my wife. So I'm going to go over to this girl's house. If it's your will, make us not love each other. Okay, see, now you're just throwing out a fleece, and God's going to come down and strike you dead. At least I would hope he would, right? This is how, so this Gideon, God's will was clear, but he just couldn't accept it. And remember, he gave three tests. First test, Lord, I don't even know if it's you talking. And then remember, he goes and he butchers a goat and prepares bread and he bakes it and he waits for it to rise. And he goes and gives it to this angel. And we find out later it's actually God in the flesh. And he puts it before it and the angel goes and it blows up. And then the angel disappears. I think that'd be enough for me. I think I would accept that. But he doesn't. Then he throws out the fleece. Lord, let the fleece be wet and the ground be dry. It works. He's like, Lord, I don't want to anger you. And again, if your first prayer is, Lord, I don't want you to be angry at me, but just don't pray that prayer. Just be done with it. Just accept it. But that's what he does. Lord, help me, you know, make the ground wet and the fleece dry. And he does it. And then we get to chapter 7. What actually happens? Remember, he's up in the mountain area looking down at this Midianite army. We find out that it is roughly around 155,000 people down there taking over everything. 155,000. So Gideon decides to get some people together. Chapter 7, verse 1. Yay, we made it to the text. Early in the morning, Jerubbaal, that is Gideon, remember he got, if you don't remember that story, go back and read it. It's really cool. And all his men camped at the spring of Harod. The camp of Midian was north of them in the valley near the hill of Moreh. And just so you know, he was able to gather, they put the word out, everyone who wants to join against the bully, right? The bully is beating us up. Let's stop the bully. God says we can stop the bully. Let's stop the, who's going to join me? They get 32,000 people. Oh, okay. That's not bad, right? 150, 32... I'm a math minor, so that's roughly 4 to 1. So for every Israelite, he better kill 4 Midianites. And again, are the Israelites trained? No, they're scared. All the rest of the Israelites are up in the hill country too, like, the Midianites are like, come on, let's go. They're like, we don't think. Could you imagine if you had 150,000 bullies and we're going to stand up to them, we only got 32,000 to stand up to them. Oh, great. So they're gathering up there. They're looking down on this Midianite camp. And I love verse 2. Because last week, Gideon put the Lord to the test. This week, the Lord shall put Gideon to the test. This is why we don't do fleeces, people. And the Lord said to Gideon, you have too many men. What? Wait. Yeah, God is not good at math, just to let you know. You have too many men for me to deliver Midian into their hands in order that Israel may not boast against me that her own strength has saved her. Announce now to the people, anyone who trembles with fear may turn back and leave Mount Gilead. Isn't that great? Like, you have too many men. No, God, we don't have a... And I don't want you to be boastful about your own actions. What would your reaction be? I won't be boastful, Lord. But yeah, how often do we give thanks back to God when he does something in our life? We're quick to take our own credit. So anyone who is afraid to stand up against the bully, leave now or forever hold their peace. And how many people leave? 22,000 men. Quick math will mean that. How many are left? Oh, it actually says in the text, 10,000 remain. 10,000, 150,000. I'm a math minor. Looking 15 to 1. I mean, this is not a good scenario. 10,000. And of course, I wish I could see it because I have a feeling that when God said, anyone who wants to leave who is scared, just go ahead and leave. I wonder if Gideon was like, well, I'm out. I know I would have been like everyone else. Could you imagine? You're standing there. If you want to leave, leave. Imagine, you know, 2/3 of the people stand up. Like, could you imagine if we did that right now? What would that be? Like, what if we're having church and I'm like, if you don't want to be here anymore, leave. And imagine everyone over here got up and left and it was just us. All right, well, this is going to be fun. It's going to be a great little church. This is how scary it is. 10,000 remain. Yes. Yeah. They were not armed. They were not military people. They were farmers. So, you know, maybe someone had a rake. Like, I could hit I could probably do some good damage with a rake, shovel maybe. But yeah, if someone has a bow and arrow and they shoot me in the heart before I hit them with my rake, it's going to be pretty bad. Yeah. Life stinks. 10,000 against 150,000. But the Lord said to Gideon, there are still too many men because God is bad at math. Take them down to the water, and I will sift them for you there. If I say this one shall go with you, he shall go. But if I say this one shall not go with you, he shall not go. So great, Gideon's like, we need fewer than 10,000. So Gideon took the men down to the water, and there the Lord told them, separate those who lap the water with their tongues like a dog from those who kneel down to drink. So it's a little, the Hebrew's a little strange. The idea is, if you grab this 10,000 person army, they get down to this pool where the spring is at, and they're going to drink because they're thirsty. Some of them got down on all fours, laid down, put their face into the water, and started drinking. Some just kind of scooped down, you know, like this, and was like that, right? Now, out of curiosity, which one would you do? You would do the second one? Yeah, it's weird. Apparently, that's not how it's done back in those days, because the groups got separated. 9,700 guys, dudes, threw their face in the water and just started slurping up, while only 300 were like, I don't know, maybe they thought it was like, I'm not going to drink out of the same Coke bottle as someone else. Like, ooh, all these people put their face in, their saliva is now all over the place. Yeah, only 300 scooped the water and drank it this way. Yeah, you might be afraid. Yeah, and I don't want to be next to Jerry. Like, oh Jerry, okay, I'll just scoop a little water up. Yeah, Jeff. Yeah, it's funny. The commentaries are all over the map. I finally read a commentary that I agreed with, because some said that, yeah, if you were rotund like me, like, I can't scoop down. Like, yeah, how many can touch our toes? I could touch my toes. It's really simple. Yeah, it's real easy. But yeah, you know, scooping down. Yeah, so get your face in the water. Some commentaries were like, oh, no. The 300 who scooped the water up with their hand, they were ready. They have an awareness. They're looking around. Dun, 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 dun. You know, and then, you know, in comes a Midianite. Oh, look, sword. You know. So they're like, oh, this is now. So the question is it the 300? Well, that's the thing. This is my theory, because I finally read a commentary, like I said, that I agreed with. The commentary said, this has nothing to do with the people. It had everything to do with, it essentially separated them into two groups, 9,700 and 300. And the question is, which group is God going to use? He's going to use the 300. Like, at that point, I'd be, you know, if you're Gideon, you're standing there like, God, that group over there, yeah, over there, 300. So I don't think it had anything to do with physicality or readiness or anything. I simply think it got separated into two groups, and God says, I know which group I want, the 300. Why? Because God says, I cannot have you thinking you did this on your own. 300 versus 150,000. Not bad. Yeah, think you could do it? Again, remember, you're standing up to the bully. He's eating everything. He's taking your milk money every single day, and now you're going to stop him, but you don't think you have enough power. I love this. So verse 7, they're separated out. Oh, verse 6, I'm sorry. 300 men lapped with their hands to their mouths. All the rest got down on their knees to drink. The Lord said to Gideon, with 300 men that lapped, I will save you and give the Midianites into your hands. Let all the other men go, each to his own place. Now, These other people are actually going to show up in chapter 8, which is really funny. Yes, Jake? Is that what it is? 1 to 500. So I could do that. I could totally do that. That'd be no problem. Yeah, 1 to 500. Well, let's see how they do. Of course, if you really want to know math, this is the reason why God is bad with math, because 300 versus 150,000 is impossible. 300 plus God versus 150,000 is a winner every time. That's why God's bad at math, because in his equation, if he's in it, then it's okay. It doesn't matter what it is. Yeah. So verse 7, the Lord said to Gideon with a... and let all the other men... Verse 8. So Gideon sent the rest of the Israelites to the tents, but kept the 300 who took over the provisions and trumpets of others. So it's like, all these people, 9,700 leaving. He's like, dude, can I have your food? Like, you're not gonna... I'm about to go into battle and die. Can I have your lamp too? Yeah. Now the camp of Midian lay below him in the valley. So they're about ready to attack. It's the night of the big fight. It is the hours before you are going to meet the bully in the playground and stand up to him. How do you think they are feeling at this point? I'd be scared. I'd be freaking out. I don't know if this is going to work. Verse 9, during the night, the Lord said to Gideon, get up, go down against the camp, because I'm going to give it into your hands. Wait, what? Now? And then I love it. Does Gideon say anything at this point? I don't know, maybe Gideon is just standing there like this. I don't know if there was facial, but I do know that inside Gideon's heart, he's like, God ain't gonna work. And so God, grace, this is one of the things, Gideon is such an idiot and is so terrible. And I don't say that condemningly, because I'm the same way, but this is not to highlight the strength of Gideon. This is always and forever to highlight the goodness and graciousness of God. As we get through this, and I promise you, because I've already studied him, we're going to get to the final judge, the dude Samson, long hair, kind of looks like Fabio. I read through the story. There is zero, this is no joke, zero redemptive value on Samson. He has got to be by far the worst person I've ever read about. But he seems to have faith, albeit I really honestly do believe that when they say faith the size of a mustard seed, I think that's Samson, because everything else this dude does is terrible. The story of Judges is not to highlight the judge and say, oh, look at this hero, we need to be like him. It's look at these judges, they are just like us. We need a God like God. That's what this is all about. So he says, verse 10, if you are afraid, thank you, God. If you are afraid to attack, go down to the camp with your servant, Pura, and listen to what they are saying. Afterward, you'll be encouraged to attack the camp. Okay, so this is a great idea. So in the middle of the night, you and your buddy are going to walk down into the middle of the camp, and I will verify. Like, what is God going to do? You can verify that you're, like, in charge? Of course, at this point, shouldn't Gideon already have enough proof? We think that, but like us, we tremble and we fear. And I was reminded of it just this past week. I hate it. Please don't do this to me. It bugs me to no end when you guys preach my sermons back to me. So I was nervous about something, and someone said, God's got this. And I'm like, shut up. You don't know what you're talking about. Stop preaching your sermon, my sermons to you. And she's like, God's got this. I'm like, oh, okay. I can't handle that. So God is saying, go on down there. He and Pura, his servant, went down to the outposts of the camp. The Midianites, the Amalekites, and all the eastern peoples had settled in the valley, thick as locusts. Their camels could no more be counted than the sand on the seashore. What do we call that in English? Called a hyperbole, right? I've told you a million times. No, I have not told you a million times. There's a lot there. It's 150,000. It's scary. Verse 13, Gideon arrived just as a man was telling a friend his dream. So he gets down there. Just as he gets there, there's these two guys, and they're out chit-chatting, talking about their dreams, because that's what dudes do. You have a dream, you're like, oh, I got to find another dude and tell my dream. That's what we should do for dude night. No, I'm just kidding. No. We will not tell each other our dreams. I had a dream, he was saying. A round loaf of barley bread came tumbling into the Midianite camp. It struck the tent with such force that the tent overturned and collapsed. Okay, don't read ahead. What is the meaning of that dream? He's hungry. That's what I'm thinking too. Yeah, there's a loaf of bread. And first of all, the loaf of bread, would that have to be a pretty old, stale loaf? Like, you know, if it's soft and warm, it's not going to really roll and hit a tent with such force it's going to fall over. It's got to be at least a hard, yeah. Does this sound like it means anything? Yeah, I'd be like, well, you know, that's what I would probably do. Like, well, where did the loaf of bread come from? You know? So, yeah, where's the wheel of cheese so we can eat the bread with it? Yeah. This has, you know, it's one of these things that on its face value means nothing. And again, that's what's so funny about the interpretation. Check out the interpretation. These are the Midianites. This is not God. This is not the Israelites. It's the Midianites. His friend responded, this can be nothing other than the sword of Gideon, son of Joash, the Israelite. God has given the Midianites and the whole camp into his hands. Did you get that from the reading of that dream? Like, what are the odds? 150,000 people in camp. Gideon and Pura. The first tent they hit, two guys just had, they're 150,000. Why those two? And just at that exact moment, these guys are telling the dream. And then if I would have just heard the dream, I'd be like, I have no idea what that means. But then the guy even interprets it and he finds out even the Midianites know that they're about to die. Even the Midianites are aware of God's will. At that point, I would be pretty much ashamed of myself that some person outside of faith knows more about God and his will than I do, even though God has already told me what he wants to do. It takes someone else to come in and say, you're not doing this right. And he finds out quickly, and I think we all know this with bullies. Bullies really are not that strong. They're very scared and weak inside, and that's what this is too. Everyone's terrified. If you look, actually, I was just having this conversation with Jacob this morning. If you think that everyone else is confident and you're the only one that's scared, you're absolutely wrong. Everyone's terrified, and that's what's happening here. Verse 15, when Gideon heard the dream and its interpretation, he worshiped God. Good action. I mean, you know, Gideon doesn't do much, right? But he has to have an angel show up and then disappear in miraculous, two fleeces thrown out, and then his army's whittled down, and he still needs encouragement. And so God does it through these Midianites. And thankfully, he worshiped God. He returned to the camp of Israel and called out, get up, the Lord has given the Midianite camp into your hands. Now, if you are one of the 299 left, as you know, Gideon just runs in, he's like, we're going to win! Yeah, sure. You got to give it up for these 300 guys. I mean, I know for a fact that if I was one of those that scooped up the water with my hand and he's like, well, you're the one going into the army, you know what I would have done? Yeah, I would have done that. I would have stuck my face in the water as fast as possible. Yeah. Looks like I'm with those guys. Yeah, these 300 people seem to have enough faith that they're going to be like, okay, sounds great. Verse 16, dividing the 300 men into three companies. Oh, great. So now you're 100 each. Like, you go that way. No, I'm not. We should stay together. No, we're going to spread out. He placed trumpets and empty jars into the hands of all of them. Remember, all the people that dropped out, they grabbed their stuff. Then from all around the camp, blows yours and shout, which is really funny. That's why I don't like Gideon, but he's so much like me. For the Lord and for Gideon. No. What did I miss? Where? Oh, I'm sorry. Did I jump? I jumped ahead. Okay, I'm sorry. Verse 17. Watch me. I read 16. dividing 300 men.
It's getting hostile in here.
dividing the 300 men into three companies, he placed trumpets and empty jars into the hands of all of them with torches inside. Okay. Oh, you wanted the torches. Okay. They've got a trumpet, they've got a jar, and they got torches in the jars. Yes. It's important because walking with the fire hidden is helpful, and then if they can do something up. See, if you are listening to this recording, you really need to come to church because it's not a dove. Wait, didn't this happen to Bernie? See, that's the problem now. My sermon is going to be a total failure because you're not going to listen anymore. All right. They got torches inside. They got torches, George, just so you know. They got torches. Yeah. You see, I've been praying, Lord, should I preach this sermon or not? Well, now I know. Now I'm lost. Where am I at? 17, thank you. Watch me, he told me. Follow my lead. When I get to the edge of the camp, do exactly as I do. When I and all who are with me blow our trumpets, then from all around the camp, blow yours and shout for the Lord and forget it. And yeah, what would be a better phrase? For the Lord. There he goes. Yay. Well, that'll all be on the recording, so it'll be for posterity. Yeah, it'll be great. I don't know why Gideon's like for the Lord and for Gideon. Like, I don't know, maybe I should start doing this, you know. Yeah, and see, and that's what I want to make sure you guys know about this. This is the success of our mission at Third Sight Ministries is God and me. So next time you pray, you're waiting for lightning. That's when the dove should have flown, or the bird should whack hit me right in the face. I'm not going to dwell on that for the Lord and for Gideon. I don't think he should have said Gideon, but, you know, that's just me. Verse 19, Gideon and the 100 men with him reached the edge of the camp at the beginning of the middle watch, just after they changed the guard. So it's about 10 p.m. at night. So this is kind of what's happening. And this is, you got to admit, Gideon is employing great strategy. He's not being stupid, which I think sometimes it's like, oh, if I follow God, I've got to check my brain at the door. No. God has given you intelligence and wisdom and savvy to be able to do stuff. And so at the shift change, one group is about to fall asleep because they're tired and they're like, my shift is over. And one group is just being woken up. Okay, that's not a bad time to do it. I'm lost again. I'm sorry. Changed the guard. They blew their trumpets and broke the jars that were in their hands. This is why George wanted to make sure you knew this. So you break the jars, and all of a sudden, if you were down in the camp, you look up, and around the top, looking down on the group, is 300 people with torches in their right hand, grasping the torches in their left hands and holding in their right hands the trumpets they were to blow. They shouted, "A sword for the Lord and for Gideon." So it's an element of surprise. They're not expecting it because you don't do warfare at nighttime. It's a little dark and it's a little hard, but all of a sudden these 300 torches appear, and if you're down in the Midianite camp, you're in trouble. But the best is verse 21. When each man held his position around the camp, all the Midianites ran crying like little babies. That's kind of a rough translation. Verse 22, when the 300 trumpets sounded, the Lord caused the men throughout the camp to turn on each other with their swords. How many Israelites entered into the camp? Zero. So, zero Israelites versus 150,000 Midianites. Who's going to win? Well, it depends upon if it's zero plus God, because God can do this on his own. Newsflash, he doesn't need you. He wants you, but he doesn't need you. When the army fled to Bethshitta toward Zeraah as far as the border of Abel-Meholah near Tabath, Israelites from Naphtali, Asher, and all Manasseh were called out. And these people were probably, some of them had to be the original 22,000 that left, right? So, do you kind of see what's happening? So The Midianite army is being routed, and Gideon puts a call out, hey, let's go get these guys. And now all of a sudden we're emboldened, because when the bully's on the run, we all of a sudden are pretty darn brave, aren't we? We like to bet on a winning horse. Gideon sent messengers throughout the hill country of Ephraim saying, come down against the Midianites and seize the waters of the Jordan ahead of them as far as Beth Barah. So all the men of Ephraim were called out, and they took the waters of Jordan as far as Beth Barah. They also captured two of the Midianite leaders, Oreb and Zeb. I love those names. They killed Oreb at the rock of Oreb and Zeb at the winepress of Zeb, which I don't know how much to make of that, but remember, all of this started with Gideon at a wine press, and then he built an altar on top of a rock. Could possibly be they pursued the Midianites and brought the heads of Oreb and Zeb to Gideon, who was by the Jordan. Gideon has his faith put to the test. As I said in my email, was this for the benefit of God? Is God up there going, man, I hope this plan that Gideon comes up with works, and I'm going to put Gideon to the test, and I sure hope he's going to do it right. I guess we just better wait and see how it all turns out. No. When God has things happen in your life, it is not for him to be looking and going, gosh, well, I wonder how Jody's going to react to all this stuff I'm going to send her way. I'm really kind of curious. Yeah, and George, you know, I'm going to have bad stuff happen to him, and I hope he makes it. We'll have to wait and see. All of these tests that we encounter are always for the purpose of us. When God puts us through these tests, we may not ask for them, we may not want them, but it actually shows who we are inside. And either we need to have a spectacular failure, probably for the express purpose of knocking our hubris and pride down and out of the way, or we're scared, sitting in a wine press, fearful of our lives, and God says, you are a mighty warrior, and you are going to be called to do great things. And on our own, I think all of us here, if we honestly ask the question, can you do great things for God? Most of us here would say, probably not. I mean, I could live my life, I can go to church, I can have a job, I can raise a family, I can go to school and get a degree, but am I really going to do something big and great for God? We often say no, because we see ourselves not as God sees us, but we see us through the lens of all of our past mistakes. And that is a problem. I understand we have mistakes. I understand we have views of ourselves. But you always forget that you by yourself with your mistakes, you are correct, you are nothing, and you are in a lot of trouble. But you and your mistakes plus God mean that he sees something totally and completely different. You may be shocked how God sees you. You may be shocked how God sees the people sitting around you. No matter how hard we try, we still judge the book by its cover. We might look at someone and say, what a failure. We might look at their actions and say, what a weak faithed person. And is that what God is doing? This has been one of these weeks that as I've read through this more and more, and my judgmentalism comes out against Gideon, I'm reminded more and more how easy it is for us to judge people at their worst possible times. And if you had your worst possible moments in life broadcast for all the world to see, how would people judge you? Probably not well. But that's not what God sees. He doesn't see those past failures. He doesn't see the fear inside of your heart. He doesn't worry about how you're going to react in certain situations, because he sees you as you really are. Because with faith, with God, all things are in fact possible. And if you are sitting here wondering, will this not bring up moments of pride. I'll say this. We often judge ourselves by our past failures, but sometimes even more dangerous than that is to judge ourselves by our past successes. If you want to see what happens when that takes place, you've got to come back next week, because that's what Judges chapter 8 is all about. Gideon has this incredible, gigantic victory, and he's going, that's it, we can do anything. And it's bad. It's just really bad because he's judging himself by his past successes. But for you today, how do you define yourself? Is it through sin or is it through grace? Is it through your accomplishments or is it through grace? Do you look at yourself with your feeble eyes or do you look at yourself as God sees you? And I pray that you would know today the overwhelming grace that God has for you because of what Jesus Christ has done. So let's pray.